Phoebe, we tucked her in bed. Then Sean took me to his room, made a satisfied woman out of me, and then mumbled, "Phoebe thinks we should get married," before he fell asleep between my boobs. He remembered the next morning and asked if I'd heard him. Confused at first, I'd finally said, "I heard you."
"For Phoebe,"
he'd said.
"If we're doing this, I want to do it full on."
We didn't have time to talk about it then because I had to leave for the hospital, but the word seemed to loop in my head like a song all day. If we're doing this, I want to do it full on. Looking back, all I can really remember is the overwhelming relief I felt at the prospect of having that bit of my life sorted with such convenience. There was nothing messy or turbulent about it. There were no manic highs with Sean, but there were no angst-ridden lows either. Sean was easy, and he and Phoebe were a family I could just join. But in hindsight, and in the stark contrast to the intensity of emotions I feel around Elliot, it almost seems insane that I came home later that day and gave Sean an enthusiastic yes. We certainly haven't done a lot more planning since then. We still haven't picked out a ring. Probably because we both realized that Phoebe doesn't seem to be that concerned after all about the woman in her house and whether that woman is going to be her new mommy. The only person who consistently asks where we are with the plan is Sabrina, and she is the one person who has said outright that she thinks this whole thing is a farce. Sean runs a hand over my hip.
"Babe, I think you need to figure out what you want."
I meet his eyes. "What I want?"
"Yeah,"
he says, nodding.
"Me, Elliot, neither of us."
And who does this? Who is so unaffected by the potential loss of his fiancée that he can suggest I give this some good thought while casually stroking my hip, suggesting the relationship may end but the sex can still happen? Does it matter to you that things are obviously so weird between us? Sean moves his hand away, closing his eyes with another long sigh.
"Of course it matters to me, but I've been through these ups and downs, and I just can't let them rule me. I can't control what you're feeling."
And I get that what he's saying is the ideal reaction to the situation we're in. It's the well-adjusted textbook version of this difficult conversation. But is that really how the human heart works? You tell it to chill, and it chills? I stare at him now, with his arm across his eyes, and I'm trying to find that flicker of something bigger, of an emotion that consumes me. I do what I used to do with Elliot sometimes. I imagine Sean standing up, walking out the door, and never coming back. With Elliot, my stomach would react as if I'd been punched. With Sean, I feel vague relief. I think back to Elliot's face when I told him I was engaged. I think about his face now, the longing there, the tiny sting of pain I see in his eyes when we turn to head our separate directions. 11 years later, and he still aches for what we had. I'm terrified of what I'm feeling. I feel like I've just woken up. I thought I didn't want intensity, but in fact I'm desperate for it. I look over at Sean, and it feels like I'm in bed with a one-night stand. Pushing up, I climb out.
"Where are you going?"
he asks. "Couch." He follows me out.
"Are you mad?"
God, this is the weirdest situation in the history of weird situations, and Sean is so calm. How did I end up here? "I just think you're right," I say. "Maybe I need to figure out what I want." Then, Saturday, September 10th, 12 years ago. Elliot was stretched out on the floor, staring up at the ceiling. He'd been that way for a while now, his worn copy of Gulliver's Travels abandoned on the pillow next to him. He seemed so intent on what he was thinking, he didn't even notice the way my eyes moved over his body whenever I turned a page. I was beginning to wonder if he would ever stop growing. Almost 17, he had shorts on today, and his long legs seemed to go on forever. They were hairier than I remembered. Not too hairy, just a light dusting of brown over his tanned skin. It was masculine, I decided. I liked it. One of the strangest things about going stretches of time between seeing someone is all the changes you'd miss if you saw them every day, like leg hair, or biceps, or big hands. In his update, he'd said his mom asked him about having laser surgery so he wouldn't have to wear glasses anymore. I tried to imagine him without his glasses, being able to look into his greenish-gold eyes without the benefit of black frames between us. I loved Elliot's glasses, but the thought of being so close to him without them did warm, weird things to my stomach. It made him feel somehow undressed in my head.
"What do you want for Christmas?" he asked.
I jumped slightly, startled. I was pretty sure I looked exactly like someone looks when they're caught staring at their best friend with less than innocent thoughts. We hadn't kissed again, but I really wanted to. His question echoed in my head. "Christmas?" Dark eyebrows pulled together, serious.
"Yeah, Christmas."
I tried to cover. "Is that what you've been thinking about all this time?"
"No."
I waited for him to elaborate, but he didn't. "I don't really know," I told him. "Any particular reason you're asking me this in September?" Elliot rolled to his side to face me, his head propped in his hand.
"I'd just like to get you something nice, something you want."
I put my book down and rolled to face him, too. "You don't have to get me anything, Elle." He made a frustrated sound and sat up. Pushing up off the carpet, he moved to stand. I reached out, wrapping my hand around his wrist. The light, lusty mood between us had been only on my end, apparently. "Are you mad about something?" Elliot and I didn't fight, really, and the idea that something between us was off tilted my internal balance, making me feel immediately anxious. I could feel his pulse like a steady drum beneath his skin.
"Do you think about me when you're back there?"
His words came out sharp, exhaled roughly. It took me a second to process what he meant. When I was back home, away from him. "Of course I do."
"When?"
"All the time. You're my best friend."
"Your best friend," he repeated.
My heart dipped low in my chest, almost painfully. "Well, you're more, too. You're my best everything."
"You kissed me this summer, and then acted like nothing happened."
This came at me like a blade to my lungs. I closed my eyes and covered my face with my hands. It had happened like that. After I kissed him in his kitchen, I'd made everything go back to how it was. Reading on the roof in the morning, lunch in the shade, swimming in the river. I'd felt his eyes on me, the shaking restraint of his hands. I remembered how warm his lips had been, and the way I felt like a lit fuse when he growled into my mouth. "I'm sorry," I said.
"Why are you sorry?"
he asked carefully, crouching down beside me.
"Are you sorry because you didn't like kissing me?"
I felt my hands flush cold, looking at him in shock. Did it feel like I didn't like it?
"I don't know,"
he said, shrugging helplessly.
"It felt like you liked it a lot, and I did too. I can't stop thinking about it."
"Really?"
"Yeah, Mace. And then you just..."
He scowled at me, face tight.
"You got weird."
My thoughts got all tangled. The memory of Emma beside him in the driveway, and the panic I always felt when I imagined him leaving my life for good. "I mean, there's Emma.
Fuck Emma,"
he said, voice rough, and it surprised me so much that I leaned back on my hands, tilting away from him. Elliot looked immediately remorseful and reached to move a strand of hair out of my face.
"Seriously, Mace, there's nothing going on with me and Emma. Is that really why you don't want to talk about what happened with us in the kitchen?"
"I think it's also that it scares me to think of messing this up." Looking down, I added, "I've never had a boyfriend, or anything. You're like the only person other than Dad who really matters to me, and I'm honestly not sure I could handle it if I didn't have you in my life." When I closed my eyes at night, the only thing I could see was Elliot. Most nights I was desperate to call him just before I fell asleep so I could hear his voice. I hated to think beyond the next weekend because I wasn't sure how our futures were going to align. I imagined Elliot going away to Harvard and me going somewhere in California, and we'd slowly turn into vague acquaintances. The idea was repellent. When I met his eyes again, I noticed the hard line of his mouth had softened. He sat down in front of me, his knees touching mine.
"I'm not going anywhere, Mace."
He picked up my hand.
"I need you the same way you need me, okay?"
"Okay." Elliot looked at my hand in his and moved our palms so they were pressed together, lacing our fingers. "Do you think about me?" I asked. Now that he'd raised it, the question gnawed at me.
"Sometimes it feels like I think about you every minute,"
he whispered. A bubble of emotion wedged tightly beneath my ribs, hitting a tender spot. I watched our clasped hands for a long time before he spoke again. I struggled to keep my eyes from his body.
"Favorite word?"
he whispered. "Zipper," I answered without thinking, feeling rather than seeing his smile in response. "You?"
"Crackle."
"Do you have a girlfriend?" I asked, and the word sounded like an explosion of wind into the room. An awkward window opened. He looked up from our hands, scowling.
"Is that a serious question?"
"Just checking." He let go of my hand and returned to his book. He wasn't reading it. He looked like he wanted to throw it at me. I scooted a little closer to him. "You can't be surprised," I asked. He gaped at me, setting the book down.
"Macy, I just asked you if you think about me. I asked why you got weird after we kissed. Do you really think I would push this subject if I had a girlfriend?"
I chewed my lip, feeling embarrassed. "No."
"Do you have a boyfriend?"
I gave him a grin. "A few here and there." He let out a wry laugh, shaking his head as he picked his book back up. Obviously, whenever I imagined kissing anyone, it was always Elliot. And we'd already covered that. Perfect fantasy, sublime reality, potentially treacherous aftermath. Even the idea of kissing him led to thoughts of a nasty, awkward breakup, and that would cause my stomach to spasm painfully. Still, I could never stop looking at him. When did he lose all his awkwardness and get so completely perfect? What would I do with him if I ever had the chance? Nearly 17-year-old Elliot was a work of long lines and definition. I would have no idea how to touch his body. Knowing him, he would just tell me. Probably give me a guidebook to the male anatomy and draw me a few diagrams. While staring at my boobs, I snorted. He looked up.
"Why are you staring at me?"
he asked. I was not. He let out a short, dry sound of disbelief.
"Okay."
Stretching his neck, he looked back down.
"You're still staring."
"I'm just wondering how it works," I asked.
"How what works?"
"When you..." I made a telling gesture with my hand. "With guys and the... you know." He raised his eyebrows, waiting. I could see the moment he knew what I was talking about. His pupils dilated so fast his eyes looked black.
"You're asking me how dicks work?"
"Elle, I don't have sisters. I need someone to tell me these things."
"You can't even handle talking about kissing me, and you want me to tell you what it's like when I get myself off?"
I swallowed down the thrilled swell in my throat. "Okay, never mind."
"Macy,"
he said more gently now,
"why don't you ever go out with anyone back home?"
Gaping at him, I told him what I thought was obvious. "I'm not interested in other guys."
"Other guys?"
"I mean," I said, catching my slip, "anyone."
"Other implies there is one guy."
He held out the palm of one hand and then lifted the other.
"And then other guys. But in this case, you said you aren't interested in any others, so there is just one guy you're interested in?"
"Stop debate teaming me." He grinned crookedly.
"Who is the one?"
I watched him for a long beat. Inhaling deeply, I decided this didn't have to be so bad. "You know I compare every boy to you. We aren't in revelation territory." The grin widened.
"You do?"
"Of course I do. How could I not? Remember, you're my best everything."
"Your best everything, you ask about wanking."
"Exactly."
"Your best everything who no other guy compares to and whose tongue you let touch your tongue."
"Right." I didn't like where this was heading. This was heading to admissions, and admissions changed things. Admissions make feelings intensify simply because they are given space to breathe. Admissions lead to love, and admitting love is like tying yourself to a train track.
"So, maybe your best everything should be your boyfriend."
I stared at him, and he stared at me. I spoke without thinking. Maybe.
Maybe.
He agreed in a whisper. Now, Thursday, October 26th. True to her promise, Sabrina brings Viv to the city to meet me for lunch. The first time that works for both of us is nearly 2 weeks after the picnic. During that time, I've essentially buried myself in work. It's strange to say it, but I've seen Sean awake only 3 times. That might be because I'm sleeping on the couch. I don't know why I can't take that last step and pack up my suitcases and move back to Berkeley. It might be the drag of the commute, or the ghosts of my past that I know still live there. Mom and Dad are in every single particle of air in that house. I've only been back for a total of 7 days since I left for college. It would be like stepping into a time capsule. Sabrina's face when I walk into the Woolly Pig tells me all I need to know about how successful I was at covering the dark circles under my eyes this morning. "Jesus Christ," she mumbles as I sit down across from her. "You look like you've been raised from the pet cemetery." I laugh, grabbing the water in front of me. "Thanks. If I'd known to expect this, I would have had an espresso waiting for you." "No coffee," I say, holding up my hand. "It's been the sole source of my calories this week, and I need something juicy, a smoothie or something." I feel her inspection as I look down at the menu. "Okay, tell me what's up," she says, leaning closer. "I saw you 2 weeks ago, but today you're like a different person." "I've been working a ton. It's a busy time. Flu season is starting." Without thinking, I glance at Viv, asleep in her stroller beside the table. "And things with Sean aren't great." "Oh, yeah?" Sabrina asks, and I don't look at her face after she says it, because I'm not sure how I'll feel if her expression matches the giddy edge to her words. "What's going on?" I meet her eyes, giving her the spare me face. "Sabrina, what? Do we have to do this? I feel like I'm going to break down in tears. You know what's going on." Holding up a hand, I begin to count off the events on my fingers. "I barely know Sean. We get engaged after 2 months. I run into Elliot at Saul's, and seeing him is like, I don't know, a kick to the soul. And then, what do you know, Elliot is back in my life, and surprise, I think things with Sean maybe aren't so great." Sabrina nods, but doesn't say anything. "You're quiet now? I thought you'd be happy to hear this." "The point is that I want you to be happy. I want to see that spark I saw the other day. I want to see you blush when someone just looks at you." "Sabrina, I have been happy with Sean. Just because I feel more overall when Elliot is around doesn't mean that those feelings are more valid or happier." "Really? Do you even know what happy looks like? I was wondering this the other day, actually. Had I ever seen you happy before the picnic?" This feels like a violent shove from someone who has known me for 10 years. "You're joking." She shakes her head. "When Elliot walked up to us, I swear that was the first time I'd seen you smile like that, with your entire body, and it made me question everything about your personality before then." "Wow," I say slowly. "That feels enormous." "You think you're happy, but you're barely living." "Sabrina, that's residency and working 80-plus hours a week. No," she says with a firm shake of her head. She leans back in her chair, taking her mug of coffee with her. "Do you remember freshman year?" I feel the cold shadow of that time creeping over me. "Barely." "Ever since I met you, Elliot has been the third person with us, every second. I sometimes felt like the things you told me, you only told me because he wasn't there." She holds up a hand when I start to respond to this. "That's not a complaint, by the way. I had Dave, and I had you. You had me, but you also had him. In your thoughts, in every single thing you did. When you went out with guys, it was like you were slinking out and sneaking back in at night, as if there was someone who might be mad that you'd been on a date." Letting out a long breath, I study her, hating her for doing this, for putting these truths, which so far lived only in the dusty shadows of my memory, out into the public space. "The first time you slept with Julian, you remember that?" I let out a laugh groan. "I do remember. It was halfway through freshman year. Guitar-playing, long-haired Julian was a demigod on campus, and a junior. Beautiful, mildly vain, not as deep as he thought he was, or maybe that's just my take in hindsight. For whatever reason, he started pursuing me in October, much to the heated jealousy of his band's groupies. I finally agreed to go out with him. At the time, I thought maybe diving into something with someone else would make everything back in California disappear. We had sex at his place after our first date. I don't really remember much about it, other than thinking while it was happening that there were at least 15 other women who would want to be in this bed right now, and that he was probably doing a fairly capable job at the whole thing. But all I wanted was for him to be done so I could go home and curl into a ball. I got back to the dorm room I shared with Sabrina, and before I could say a single word, I threw up on her favorite pair of purple docks before breaking down into a hysterical puddle and telling her everything about Elliot. "Poor Julian," I say. "He was cute," she says, "and it worked for a while because you weren't invested. You're never invested, Macy. You only have a handful of people you'd actually call friends and keep everyone else on the surface." I move to object, and she lifts a sassy hand to stop me. "Let me get this out. I've been working on this speech since the picnic." I smile in spite of my anger. "Okay. I'm sure Sean is a great guy, but it's another version of you and Julian. Everything's on the surface. You never feel what you felt for Elliot, but it's convenient. You don't want to feel that again anyway." I nod tightly. Sabrina can't really be blamed for saying aloud the things I've started to wonder too. "But shit, Mace," she says gently. "Doesn't it seem sort of selfish? You give only as much as you're willing. Luckily, this time Sean is happy with the scraps." I sit back in my chair. "My goodness," I say. "Tell me what you really think." She chews on her lower lip, studying me. "Are you saying I'm wrong?" I scrub my hands over my face, feeling more tired than I've been all week. "It's not that simple, and you know it." Sabrina closes her eyes, breathing slowly in and then out. Looking at me again, she says gently, "I know, honey. The thing is, you're pretending like you can just walk away from Elliot. Can you? And if not, what are you doing staying engaged to another man?" I know, I say, feeling a simmering in my stomach. Her expression softens. "Don't you just want to see where it could go with Elliot? The worst thing that could happen is it doesn't work and he's not in your life anymore." She leans back in, saying more quietly, "You know you can survive that, at least minimally." I spin my fork on the table. "What's keeping you with Sean?" I know she wants a serious answer, but I'm just done with the intensity of this conversation. "His place is so convenient." She lets out a barking laugh that actually startles Viv in her sleep. "They're fluffing your pillows in hell, Macy Leah Sorensen." "I don't think one gets pillows in hell," I say, smiling back at her. "And I'm kidding. I'm just having a hard time trusting these new doubts, because a few weeks ago I was perfectly happy with Sean. What if this is a blip?" She lets out a skeptical, "Mm-hmm." I blink up to her. "Come on. You come on. You know I'm right. Sean is easy, I get it. He's a cactus and Elliot is an orchid. I get that too, just what? Just don't be a testicle about this," she says. Sabrina hates using pussy to mean weak, especially after birthing her 10-pound baby the old-fashioned way. "When you think about kissing Elliot, what does it make you feel?" My entire body explodes in heat, and I know it shows immediately on my face. I know what it's like to kiss Elliot. I know how he sounds when he comes. I know how his hands become wild and roaming when he's hard. I know how he learned to touch and kiss and give pleasure because he learned with me. I know how good it was, even for the short time I had it.
"I don't even need you to answer."
He leans back when our waitress comes by to take our orders. When she's left again, my phone vibrates in my bag and I pull it out, laughing. It's a message from Elliot, whom I haven't spoken to since the picnic.
"Have you talked to Sean about New Year's? I'd love for you to come with me. Think of it as a chance to do research for the wedding you don't feel like planning."
I turn my phone around, showing it to Sabrina, and she laughs, shaking her head. Intervention complete. Then, Saturday, January 14th, 11 years ago. Elliot sprawled on the floor, pulling a new furry pillow off the futon and tucking it beneath his head. It was nearly 2 p.m., and Dad and I had barely made it up here due to some terrifying dry rattling under the hood of the Volvo. While Dad and Mr. Nick had worked on Dad's car, Elliot and I had devoured some cold leftover chicken on the front steps. Back in the warmth of the house, I was more likely to take a nap than read an entire chapter. Elliot's voice seemed deeper than it had, even the weekend before.
Favorite word?
I closed my eyes, thinking, excruciating.
Wow.
Elliot paused, and when I looked over at him, he was staring at me curiously.
That's a zinger. Update?
I kicked off my shoes, and one of them barely missed the side of his head. We'd spent the past hour together, but something about being back in the closet, with the blue walls and stars and the warm bulk of Elliot's body nearby, seemed to loosen everything inside me. Things had been hard in 9th and 10th grade, but 11th? Definitely the worst. Girls suck. Girls gossip and are petty and suck, I said. Elliot marked his place in his book and closed it, placing it at his side.
Elaborate.
My friend Nikki, I said, she really likes this guy Ravesh, but Ravesh asked me to spring formal and I said no because he's just a friend, but Nikki is mad at me anyway, as if I could help that Ravesh asked me and not her. So she told our friend,
breathe.
I took a deep breath. She told our friend Elise that I told Ravesh's friend Astrid that I wanted to go with Ravesh just so he would ask me, and then I turned him down. Elise believed her, and now neither Nikki nor Elise are speaking to me.
Neither Nikki nor Elise is speaking to you,
he corrected, and then at my glare apologized under his breath before adding,
clearly Elise and Nikki is bitches.
I laughed, and then laughed harder. Everything felt so easy in the closet. Why couldn't it always feel this way? He scratched his jaw, watching me.
You should take me to your spring formal.
You would go? You hate that stuff. Elliot nodded and licked his lips distractingly.
I would go.
Everyone wants to meet you. I found myself unable to look away from his mouth, imagining being tasted.
Well, that is perfectly lopsided. I have no desire to meet everyone.
He grinned at me.
But I do want to see you in something other than pajamas, jeans, or shorts.
You would really go to spring formal with me? He tilted his head, brows drawn.
Is it so hard to accept that I want to be the only person you'd consider taking to a stupid formal?
Why?
Because you're my best friend, Macy, and despite your ridiculous reticence,
good alliteration,
you are the girl I want. I want to be together.
My stomach flipped in thrill and anxiety. You kiss other girls?
Rarely.
Ever.
Obviously, I wouldn't if I could kiss you.
I sighed, chewed my lip, fidgeted. Why can't everyone be like you?
I can be enough of your world that it feels like everyone is.
I smiled up at him, softly, pressing down the familiar bubble of need. It was getting harder and harder to ignore that I really, truly loved Elliot. What's your favorite word? I asked him. He sucked on his lower lip for a moment, thinking.
Vex,
he said quietly. Now, Wednesday, November 8th. After that one text during lunch with Sabrina, things with Elliot snowball and we're doing something we didn't do even in high school, talking nearly every day, maybe only for a few minutes. Sometimes it's just over text, but I feel his presence almost constantly. And no matter how much I want to talk myself out of it, I know the gentle hum of relief in my thoughts is because of him. Perhaps relatedly, things with Sean are weird at best. We've had zero arguments. We've had zero conversations about what we're doing. When I happen to catch them awake, Phoebe seems happy to see me. Sean seems happy to see me. I'm sure if I planned a big wedding tomorrow, Sean would still happily show up. I'm sure if I put off planning it indefinitely, Sean would never ask about it. I'm also sure I could leave, and he would be fine with that, too. It's the strangest thing I've ever been a part of, And yet it could be so fucking easy. It requires nothing of me, requires no involvement from my heart, and I know without a doubt that he doesn't need me. We could have a relationship that gives us both sex, financial security, a roof over our heads, and stimulating conversation at the dinner table, but otherwise live entirely separate lives. But the critical truths that we aren't really in love, never have been, and its absence troubles me, don't seem to come in little drops of awareness. They're suddenly there, in stark black and white, shouting, "This relationship is so very over," every time we smile politely as we shift around each other at the bathroom sink. I'm sick over it. I'm desperate to find the best way out. Unfortunately, I worry that Sean's chief reaction will be disappointment. I am as convenient a lover to him as he is to me. But in his case, he may not need more. He has the love of his life already, in the form of a 6-year-old daughter. A good start seems to be to make sure I can afford to live on my own in the city. I take a rare vacation day and drive to El Cerrito to do something I've been putting off for months, meeting with my financial advisor. Daisy Milligan is Dad's old finance whiz, and I kept her more out of sentimentality and laziness than any particular knowledge about her skill. That said, though she's approaching 70, she barely needs to refer to my file while lecturing me on what I have in my trust, enough to cover home repairs and taxes, but not much more, and why I should sell one of my houses. I need a retirement account more than I need 2 properties. I don't dare mention that I'm living in San Francisco and not even making rental income from the Berkeley house. I hate talking about money. I hate even more seeing how badly I need to get organized financially. Afterward, I'm sort of high-strung and buzzy, and when Elliot texts asking how my day is going and I tell him I'm on his side of the bay, meeting up seems like a pretty obvious choice. He suggests Fat Apples in Berkeley, having no idea how close that is to my house. So instead, I suggest we meet at the top of the Berkeley Hills in Tilden Park, at the entrance to the Wildcat Creek Trail. I get there before he does, and outside my car, I pull my fleece higher on my neck to battle the wind. The fog rolls in over the hills, making it look like the gray horizon is sinking down into the valley an inch at a time. I love Tilden, and have so many memories of coming up here with Mom, riding the ponies, feeding the cows at the little farm. Dad and I would come nearly every weekend after Mom died to feed the ducks at the pond. We'd sit in silence, tossing torn-off pieces of bread into the water, and watch the ducks snatch them up, quacking at one another competitively. The nostalgia of Tilden seems to mix with the nostalgia of Elliot, and forms a potent brew in my blood, tearing through me. Even though he and I have never been here together, it feels like we have. It feels like he's part of my nuclei, entwined with my DNA. So seeing him emerge from the fog of the parking lot and move toward me with his long, loping stride and tight black jeans, it makes my anxiety just evaporate. In a pulse of obvious epiphany, I realize Sabrina was right. I haven't been living without him. I've been merely surviving. I want to share this life with him somehow. I just have no idea how that looks. He seems to read my mood as he lowers himself onto the bench beside me, sliding his arm along the back.
"Hey, you. Everything okay?"
The impulse to hug him is nearly debilitating. "Yeah, just long day." He laughs at this, reaching with his hand to wrap a gentle fist around my ponytail and tug.
"And it's only noon.
I met with Dad's old financial advisor." With his other hand, he reaches up, scratching his eyebrow.
"Yeah? How'd that go?"
"She wants me to sell one of the houses." Elliot falls silent, digesting this.
"How does that feel to you?"
"Not great." I look up at him. "But I know she's right. I don't live in either of them. It's just that I don't want to get rid of either of them either."
"They both carry a lot of memories, good and bad."
Like that, he cuts right through everything. Even since the first time he asked about my mom, he's gently relentless. I pull a leg up and turn to face him. We're so close, and even though we're outside in a public park, there's no one around us and it feels so intimate. His eyes are more green than brown today. He's a little stubbly, like he didn't shave this morning. I slide my hand between my knees to keep from reaching out and cupping his jaw. Can I ask you a question? Elliot's eyes dip briefly to my mouth and then back again.
Always.
Do you think I keep things bottled up? Straightening, he looks around as if he needs a witness.
Is this a serious question?
I push him playfully, and he feigns injury. Sabrina suggested I have a habit of keeping people at arm's length.
Well,
he says, choosing his words carefully.
You always talked to me, but I had the sense you didn't really do that with anyone else. So maybe that's still true?
A car drives past, and its diesel engine chugs loudly around the parking loop, pulling our attention momentarily away from each other and out to the grass-lined lot. The faint noises of animal life trickle to us from the little farm just up the gravel road. When I don't respond, he continues.
I mean, maybe I'm biased by our current circumstances, but I feel like maybe you don't really talk about stuff. And I might be pushing my luck here, but I get the feeling that Sean is that way too.
I choose to ignore that part, wanting to avoid the Sean conversation with Elliot entirely. I know now what I have to do, but I owe Sean enough to discuss it with him first. I used to talk to Dad, I say, sidestepping like a pro. Not like I did with you, maybe, but about school and Mom.
Yeah, but we're talking about now,
he says.
You were always pretty insular, but do you have anyone other than Sabrina?
I have you. After an awkward beat, I add, I mean, now I do. Another pause. Again. His expression straightens, and Elliot picks up a twig from the ground, resting his elbows on his knees and spinning the stick between his fingers and thumb, fidgeting. I know what's coming.
Macy.
He looks over his shoulder at me.
Do you love Sean?
I knew it was coming, yeah, but the weight of his question still propels me up off the bench and 2 paces away.
I've seen you in love.
He says gently, not standing.
It doesn't look like you're in love with him.
I don't answer, but he reads me anyway.
I don't get it.
He growls.
Why are you with him?
I turn back around to catch his expression, brows furrowed, mouth tight with emotion. It takes a few breaths for me to put the words together in a way that doesn't feel supremely melodramatic. Because, I tell him, we have the totally fucked up agreement of emotionally messed up people that was unspoken, I guess, until recently, that we only give each other a fraction of ourselves. Losing him would never wreck me. I shake my head and look down at my shoe, toeing the dirt. I feel my epiphany from earlier about a robust shared life starting to fade as Elliot pokes at my self-preservation instincts. I hate that Sabrina was right. I hate that retreating to my cocoon is my first reflex. I realize how cowardly that sounds, but I don't think I could take losing someone I love again.
It hurt that much,
he says quietly, not really a question,
what I did. When are we going to talk?
I didn't just lose you, I remind him. I stop, needing a second to breathe. The memories of the last time I saw Elliot used to make me physically sick. Now they just send a wavy lurch through my body. I can see he's processing this. He studies my face, turning the words around in his mind and looking at them from different angles, like he knows he's missing something. Or maybe I'm just being paranoid.
What's his story?
He asks. You mean Sean's? Elliot nods, picking up another twig.
He was married?
Yeah. She was in finance and got addicted to cocaine on a work trip. His head shoots up, eyes shocked.
Seriously?
Yeah. Terrible, right? I look past him out into the parking lot. So I think part of it for him is that he has his daughter, and he never really got to get over Ashley. It's been really easy for both of us to just fall into something permanent without really needing each other. Elliot leans forward.
Macy.
Elliot.
Are you staying because of Phoebe?
I stare at him, genuinely confused. What?
Phoebe.
No, I heard the name. I just don't understand how... Oh, I get what he's saying. No.
I mean, she's this sweet little girl without a mom.
He says it like it's obvious why I'd stick around. And okay, from the outside I can see why he'd think that. But he doesn't know them. She doesn't need me. I reassure him. She's got an awesome involved dad. I'm this... I wave my hand around, unsure. This accessory. I mean, let's be real. I don't really know how to mom anyway. So she doesn't seem to need anything from me. He grunts a little, looking down at the twig he's slowly and methodically shredding.
Okay.
I glare. What does okay mean?
It means okay.
You can't think that long before giving me an okay. That's a condescending okay. He laughs and tosses the stick to the ground before looking up at me.
Okay.
A challenge. He wants to engage me. I can tell. God damn it. I turn and stare up at the education center and the gray clouds rolling in behind it.
She might need a mom when she gets her period,
he says quietly.
Or when her friends are jerks.
Maybe she'll have a friend in a closet who listens to her instead. I counter, and then turn to look up at him, suspicious. Why does it feel like you're trying to talk me into staying with Sean? Are you reverse psychologizing me? Grinning, he relents.
Come on, let's talk about something else. Favorite word?
Heat ripples across my skin. I'm so unprepared for this that my mind stalls, and suddenly there are no words anywhere. I need to think. What about you? His laugh comes as a low rumble.
Mellifluous.
I scrunch my nose. That's a mouthful.
It most certainly is, ma'am.
He growls with a meaningful lean to his words. He gets a pebble tossed at him for that.
Your voice is mellifluous.
He murmurs, pushing off the bench to stand and move toward me.
And come on, your turn. You don't get to think too hard on this cheater. You know the rules.
I watch his lips part as he looks at my mouth, watch his tongue dart out. Limerence. There's no other word like it. The state of being infatuated with another person. Elliot's eyes shoot up to mine, pupils dilating like a drop of ink in a pond.
You're terrible.
I'm not trying to be. He nods to the trail marker, beckoning me to follow. We hike down the path, and it reminds me of walking with him through Armstrong Woods or along the dry creek bed in summer. It's so weird how it feels like another lifetime, and also like it was 2 weeks ago. Slowly, our steps converge into the crunch, crunch, crunch of feet on gravel moving in tandem. He shortened his strides to match mine. Are you happy? I ask him. The question is so abrupt I expect him to balk a little, but he doesn't.
I've had moments of it, yeah.
I don't like this answer. I want him to be joyful, loved, adored, full of everything all the time.
I'll admit,
he adds,
I feel more of it being near you.
It's heady, knowing I have the power to deliver that.
Are you happy?
He asks. I haven't been. I tell him, and feel him turn to look at the side of my face. And being near you again has made me realize it. We stop on a tiny slippery bridge in the middle of the woods, looking at each other. You make me feel so many things. I admit in a hush. He reaches up, gently pulling my ponytail through his fist.
Me too. That was always true.
Shifting his hand to smooth a palm over the front of my hair, he murmurs,
I wasn't trying to talk you into staying with Sean, by the way. I just think you're being too hard on yourself.
My eyes narrow in skepticism. Me? Nodding, he says,
I think you're beating yourself up for being with Sean. It's why I asked about Phoebe and...
Ashley?
Yeah, Ashley.
He uses the tip of his index finger to push his glasses up and stares out at the thick trees in front of us.
You act like you're with him only because it's easy. But in some ways, he's your dad in this scenario, and you're the woman who came after your mom. Sean doesn't have as much to give, but you understand why. After all, you wouldn't want to try to replace anyone.
I stare up at him in shock, In only a few sentences, Elliot has just explained why it makes sense for me to be with Sean, while simultaneously proving that he, Elliot, is the only person who truly understands a thing about me. I didn't even see this truth until now. Why are you so good to me, after everything? Elliot tilts his head as he looks back at me. Of course, he doesn't see it skewed this way. He only knows his betrayal, not mine.
Because I love you.
Emotion clogs my throat, and I have to swallow a few times to get the words out. I don't think I really noticed before how numb I've been. Or cared, maybe. I see the way this hits him, physically.
Mace.
I laugh darkly at this, at how fucking horrible it sounds. That's awful, isn't it? He steps forward abruptly, pulling me into his chest. One hand cups the back of my head, the other wraps around my shoulders. And it feels like I haven't really cried in 10 years. Then, Saturday, June 3rd, 11 years ago. Dad and I packed up our lives for a summer to be spent in Healdsburg. Nervous clawing took up residence in my stomach. Everything felt different this summer. We'd finished junior year and were on the cusp of being seniors. School seemed more interesting, friends seemed less dramatic. And although Elliot and I hadn't gone to my spring formal together, I hadn't gone at all, actually, summer always felt like when things between the two of us shifted monumentally. I was 17, Elliot was nearly 18. Last summer, we had kissed, we'd admitted to feelings, and ever since, he'd looked at me differently, more like something to be devoured than something to be protected. As much as I tried to think we could stay the kind of friends we'd always been, I knew I also wanted more. He was already one of the two most important people in my life. Instead of worrying about losing him, I had to focus on how to keep him. I was draped on the pillows in the corner when he stepped into the room the Saturday after our arrival.
"Hey, you," he said.
At the sound of his voice, I jumped up and ran to him, flinging my arms around his neck. It was a different sort of hug. Instead of creating the careful triangle embrace we'd always managed, shoulders touching, nothing else, I pressed my front all along his, from my chest to my stomach to my hips. Of course I knew he was the same Elliot from only a few weeks ago, the last time we'd been to the house, but after all my nervous obsessing over what the summer might be like, I suddenly didn't feel like the same Macy. He froze for a moment, and then reacted with this tiny, perfect grunt of relief. Bending, he wrapped his arms around me and exhaled a quiet, "Hey," against the top of my head. For a few breaths, everything went still, and my entire world was the feeling of Elliot's heart beating against mine, and the way his hand spread across my lower back. "I'm so excited it's summer," I said into his neck. He stepped back, still smiling.
"Me too."
There it was again, the breathless silence between us. And then he broke it, brandishing two books in his hand.
"I brought you something to read."
"Something for our library?" He laughed dryly.
"Not really. You may not want to leave these out."
His words confused me until I looked at the covers. Delta of Venus by Anais Nin and Tropic of Cancer by Henry Miller. I was enough of a book nerd to know these were not books I would already find in my high school's library. "What are these?" I asked, seeking confirmation. He shrugged.
"Erotic literature."
"When did you get them?"
"A couple of years ago. I read them in January."
I swallowed thickly. After my revelation that things were definitely changing between me and Elliot, these books felt like blistering rocks in my hands. Elliot flopped down on the futon.
"You're all curious about boys and sex. I thought you might want to read them."
I felt my entire face heat and handed the books back, avoiding his eyes. "Oh, that's okay." I was ready for a step forward, but the idea of sex and Elliot sent me into lightheaded territory.
"That's okay?"
he asked, incredulous. "I'm not sure I'd like them." My voice was thick. The lie didn't want to roll off my tongue. He smirked,
Well, I'm done with them anyway. If it's okay, I'll leave them here.
A week into vacation, and I caved. The nondescript book spines had been staring at me, daring. I'd put them on the shelf between The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. In other words, squarely in Elliot territory, as a hint that he was welcome to take them home if he chose. It's not like I wasn't curious. It's not like I didn't itch to pick them up. But with Elliot stretched out in front of me every day, absently reaching to scratch his stomach or crossing his legs at the ankle, the movement somehow redefining and emphasizing what existed beneath the buttons of his jeans, I wasn't sure what I really needed was more erotica. Alas, Delta of Venus was first. I started it at daybreak, hours, I reasoned, before Elliot would show up. But as usual, it was like he knew.
"Ooh, what are you reading?"
he asked from the doorway. The barest daylight weakly lit my bedroom behind him. He blocked most of it with the width of his shoulders. I ignored the rising heat in my cheeks and turned back to the cover as if I needed to remind myself. "Oh, just one of the books you got me."
"Ah,"
he said, and I heard the satisfied grin in his voice.
"You're up early, too. Which one?"
Unwilling to say the name, I simply held up the book and waved it at him, struggling to look casual, even though I knew my face was a ripe, heated red.
"Mind if I join you in the closet?"
"Suit yourself." I rolled onto my stomach and continued reading. Whoa. The words were almost too much even for the privacy of my thoughts. I'd always thought of sexual things in such abstract ways, not with language, but with visuals. And even more intense, I realized while reading this, I always imagined Elliot. I would imagine him coming closer and touching me, what he might say or how he might look, but never had I thought words like quivering and tormented with desire and absorbed him until he came. I could feel him watching me, but worked to keep my expression neutral. I said thoughtfully. "Interesting." Elliot exhaled a laugh.
"What did you just read?"
he asked a while later, voice teasing.
"Your eyes are going to fall out of your head."
"It's erotic literature," I said, shrugging. "Safe Money says I read something erotic."
"Share."
"No."
"Yes."
"Not a chance."
"It's okay if you're embarrassed by it,"
he said, returning to his book.
"I won't push."
I was intensely embarrassed by it. But at the same time, I was thrilled by it and vexed by it. It was sexual, but so impersonal. I wanted to infuse it with more feeling. His hands became Elliot's. Her hands became mine. I imagined emotion there that wasn't on the page. I wondered if it was the same for Elliot when he read it, and whether he noticed how distant it all seemed. I inhaled a shaky breath and read, "So was Venus born of the sea, with this little kernel of salty honey in her, which only caresses could bring out of the darker recesses of her body." Elliot stared at his book, eyebrows knitted together as he nodded sagely. His voice came out a little hoarse.
"That's a good line."
"A good line?" I repeated incredulously. "It's..." Actually, I didn't have an ending to the sentence. It was a level of thinking I didn't really have the capacity or experience to articulate, but something about it felt familiar in an ancient kind of way.
"I know,"
he murmured.
"Do you like the rest of it?"
"It's okay." I flipped back through the pages. "It's a little impersonal, and some of the stories are kind of sad." Elliot laughed, and I gaped at him. "What?" I asked.
"Did you read the foreword, Macy?"
I scowled. "Who reads the foreword to erotica?" He laughed again and shook his head.
"No, you should. The stories were commissioned by a wealthy man. He just wanted sex. No feelings, no emotion."
"Oh," I said, looking down at the book that suddenly made so much more sense. "Yeah, no, I don't like it. Not like that." He nodded, adjusting the beanbag beneath him. "You read this?" I asked. He hummed an affirmative noise. "Did you like it?"
"I had the same reaction you did, I think."
With a tiny grunt, he stretched his legs out, putting his hands behind his head. I didn't look at the buttons on his jeans. Certainly not twice.
It's sexy, but distant, too.
Why did you read it?
Why?
He repeated incredulously as he lifted his head to look at me.
I don't know, because I love to read. I love that you can use words to convince people, or anger people, or entertain people, but you can use them to...
He shrugged, blushing a little.
Arouse people, too.
I looked back down to the book, unsure what else to say.
I haven't seen you since April,
he said.
Whatever happened with spring formal?
Laughing, I told him, Nikki went with Ravesh.
Of course she did. Drama always settles with the dullest outcome possible. But I meant you.
Oh. I dropped the book and lifted a hand to chew on my fingernail. Yeah, I just stayed at home. I could feel him watching me, and he pushed up onto an elbow.
I would have come, you know.
Looking at him, I tried to show him with my eyes that I really hadn't wanted to go. I know.
You don't want me to meet your friends,
he asked, and his tone was playful, but at the distant edge was a sincere worry. Quickly, I shook my head. It's not that. I looked at him, at his face that was nearly in perfect proportion now, his expressive eyes, full mouth, angled jaw. Okay, I guess it's partly that. I want you to meet them, but I don't really want them to meet you. He scrunched his nose.
Okay.
I mean, I said, wanting to defuse the insult I saw on his face. I didn't really trust Nikki and Elise at the time, and I felt like if they met you, they might flirt with you, especially at that dance, and I would have been a ball of rage. Brows lifted skyward in understanding.
Oh.
And also, I glanced back down again, finding it easier to say these things to my lap. This is sort of our little bubble. I gestured vaguely around the room, and when I met Emma, it changed that for me. Before, she was just a name, and I could pretend that you didn't have more time with her every week than you had with me.
But I don't, Mace.
I'm just using that example, I explained, looking back up. I wasn't sure that you would really want to have a face to put with these names I'm spending time with. Some clarity washed over him.
Oh, I think I get it.
I think he did.
There's a guy who likes you.
I nodded. Yeah.
There's a few guys, and they were at the dance, and you and I are a weird non-couple, and you weren't sure how to...
He let the words trail off before saying,
You didn't want me to end up feeling like the outsider.
I pulled my legs under me on the futon. Yeah, I just think it could have been weird. You're not my outside, you're my every side. But in the moment, you might not have seen it that way, or believed me. I looked up at him, hastily adding, Just speaking from my experience with the Emma thing.
Okay,
he murmured. I want you in my whole life, I said carefully, stepping a toe out into the vast landscape of more. I think all the time about how my real fear isn't other girls. It's losing you. I'm terrified of what it would feel like if you weren't in my life anymore. His eyes grew tight, his voice reverent.
That won't ever happen.
And if we started, and it somehow went wrong... I had to swallow a few times after saying this, tamping down the storm that happened inside me at the prospect of this. Anyway, I don't think the dance was the first place to do that. To bring this life into that one, it would have been too much off the bat.
I get that.
He stood, walking over to the futon and sitting down next to me.
I told you already, Mace. I want to be your boyfriend.
Reaching out, he coaxed me to him until I was leaning against him and finally laying my head in his lap. He picked his book back up, and I had mine, and I listened to the even rhythm of his breathing. You know, I said, staring up at the ceiling while he had one hand slowly dragging again and again through my hair. These books were sort of the perfect gift.
How's that?
Number 47 on Mom's list is to tell me not to have sex until I can talk about sex. Beneath me, Elliot went very still.
Yeah.
I just think that's good advice, I guess. Like, if you can't talk about it, you shouldn't be doing it. A tiny nervous laugh burst out of him.
Do you want to talk about sex today?
Giggling,